Can we still read a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam? In the science of Krishna consciousness, there's a general progression in terms of study from Sri Ishopanishad to the Bhagavad Gita to the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, or the Nectar of Devotion, and then to Srimad Bhagavatam. So this text is quite advanced, but I can see by your faces that you are also quite advanced. So I shall proceed. And along the way, as required, I may give some of the background from the Bhagavad Gita. So this is Canto 2, Chapter 3, Pure Devotional Service, Text 22. Please repeat after me. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Please repeat. Jivan.
Jivan.
Shava.
Shava.
Bhagavata.
Bhagavata.
Angri.
Angri.
Renum.
Renum.
Na.
Na.
Jatu.
Jatu.
Martya.
Martya.
Abhilapeta.
Abhilapeta.
Ya.
Ya.
Tu.
Tu.
Shri.
Shri.
Vishnupadya.
Vishnupadya.
Manucha.
Manucha.
Tulasya.
Tulasya.
Shasvan.
Shasvan.
Shava.
Shava.
Ya.
Ya.
Tu.
Tu.
Naveda.
Naveda.
Gandam.
Gandam.
So every verse in these texts is a mantra. And just as you benefit by hearing a mantra or chanting a mantra, even if you don't know the meaning, you also benefit by hearing and reciting the verses from Srimad Bhagavatam or the Bhagavad Gita. But if you understand the meaning, you get more benefit. Now we will discuss the meaning. Please repeat. Jivan.
Jivan.
While living.
While living.
Shava.
Shava.
A dead body.
A dead body.
Bhagavat Angri Renum.
Bhagavat Angri Renum.
The dust of the feet of a pure devotee.
The dust of the feet of a pure devotee.
Na.
Na.
Never.
Never.
Jatu.
Jatu.
At any time.
At any time.
Martya.
Martya.
Mortal.
Mortal.
Abhilapeta.
Abhilapeta.
particularly received.
Particularly received.
Ya.
Ya.
A person.
A person.
To. But.
But.
Shri.
Shri.
With opulence.
With opulence.
Vishnupadya.
Vishnupadya.
The lotus feet of Vishnu.
The lotus feet of Vishnu.
Manuja.
Manuja.
A descendant of Manu.
A descendant of Manu.
A man.
A man.
Tulasya.
Tulasya.
Leaves of the Tulsi tree.
Leaves of the Tulsi tree.
Svasan.
Svasan.
While breathing.
While breathing.
Shava.
Shava.
Still a dead body.
Still a dead body.
Ya.
Ya.
Who.
Who.
To.
To.
But.
But.
Naveda.
Naveda.
Never experienced.
Never experienced.
Dandam.
Dandam.
The aroma.
The aroma.
Translation. The person who has not at any time received the dust of the feet of the Lord's pure devotee upon his head is certainly a dead body. And the person who has never experienced the aroma of the Tulsi leaves from the lotus feet of the Lord is also a dead body, although breathing. Please repeat. The person who has not at any time,
the person who has not at any time
received the dust of the feet of the Lord's pure devotee,
received the dust of the feet of the Lord's pure devotee
upon his head,
upon his head
is certainly a dead body,
is certainly a dead body.
And the person who has never experienced,
and the person who has never experienced
the aroma of the Tulsi leaves,
the aroma of the Tulsi leaves
from the lotus feet of the Lord,
from the lotus feet of the Lord
is also a dead body,
is also a dead body,
although breathing,
although breathing.
Is anyone here for the first time?
I feel like it's my first time.
Purport by Srila Prabhupada. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, one of the authorities in the line, the breathing dead body is a ghost. When a man dies, he is called dead. But when he again appears in a subtle form, not visible to our present vision, and yet acts, such a dead body is called a ghost. Ghosts are always very bad elements, always creating a fearful situation for others. So I will stop here just to give a conceptual framework for what we just read. But the first instruction of the Bhagavad Gita is that the actual identity of the living entity is Atma, which is a spiritual spark, which is part and parcel of the Supreme Spirit, or God. And that spiritual spark, or Atma, is eternal, which means it has no beginning and no end. Nahamyate hunyamane sarire. When the body is destroyed, the atma is not destroyed, but it continues to exist. Now, what happens to the atma when it leaves the body? Of course, if the atma has become completely pure in bhakti yoga, then the person does not have to take birth again in the miserable material world, but goes back home, back to Godhead. But if the living entity is not perfect in Krishna consciousness at the end of life, then he or she will take birth again. And the body that one gets in one's next life is determined by one's thoughts at the time of death and by one's activities during one's life. So, there are 8,400,000 species of life, and the living entity will get that birth, which is just suitable for his or her desires. Now, there are some exceptional cases in which a person dies thinking of something that does not correspond to one of the 8,400,000 species of life. Or it may be that someone does something which does not lead to one of those forms of life. So I will give two examples. If someone commits suicide, what does that show about his desires? It means he desires not to have a body, not to have a gross body. But generally, a person commits suicide because he or she is frustrated in fulfilling his or her material desires. So this leads to a peculiar situation where the person has gross material desires, but does not want a gross physical body. So that person will get the body of a ghost. And I will just explain exactly what that means. According to the Bhagavad Gita, there are gross material elements and subtle material elements. And then higher than all of them is the Atma, the soul, and then the Paramatma, the Supreme Soul. So the five gross material elements form the gross physical body. And the subtle material elements, that means the mind, the intelligence, and the ego, false ego, comprise the subtle material body. And then beyond gross and subtle matter is spirit. Now, at the time of death, the person's consciousness carries him to the next body. That consciousness consciousness is in the subtle body, the mind, intelligence, and ego. But in the case of a ghost, that subtle body doesn't carry him to a gross body, because he already established the fact that he doesn't want a gross body by committing suicide. That means he doesn't want a gross body, but he has the subtle body. But he has gross material desires. And therefore, a person in a ghost's body is very frustrated. Now, there was a movie, I don't mean to introduce mundane culture to this discussion. But I was living in India, and some of my god brothers, that means fellow disciples of our spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, told me about this movie called Ghosts, and they were convinced that the persons who made the movie had read Srila Prabhupada's books, had read Srimad Bhagavatam, because it was actually quite accurate in terms of certain principles. So, anyway, I didn't, after meeting Srila Prabhupada, go to movies or anything like that. But it so happened that on an international flight, they showed the film Ghost. And in those days, it wasn't like now, everyone has the whole menu of different movies to choose from. It was whatever the airline chose, that's what everyone saw. So I watched it. And there is one scene where the ghost is on a railway platform. And it was from, probably 30 years ago. On a railway platform, and there's a vending machine on the railway platform with cigarettes. And, he, in his subtle body, he had that craving to smoke a cigarette. And he was pounding on the vending machine, banging the vending machine, trying to get a cigarette to fulfill that craving. But he couldn't. He couldn't do it. So, it's a fact that because a ghost has these gross material desires but doesn't have a gross physical body, that a ghost will try to get possession of someone else's body in order to try to, fulfill his desires through that person's body. So that's, so that's one situation. Another situation is that a person is leaving his body and is very attached to his house. So at the time of death, he thinks of his house. This is especially common in the case of people who have mansions or palaces or castles. So they leave their body thinking of their castle. But there is no life form that corresponds to a castle. So, you were so attached to your castle, but you could come back as a ghost and live in your castle. And therefore, there are many mansions and estates and castles that are haunted by ghosts. Now, it so happened that in the history of the Hare Krishna movement, that haunted houses were up for sale. And people knew they were haunted. And so the sellers could not ask for a very high price. So the devotees asked Srila Prabhupada about our buying haunted houses. And he said that if we perform Sankirtan, the chanting of the holy name of the Lord, and the chanting of the glories of the Lord, the ghosts will not be able to stay. They may be delivered from their ghostly existence, or they may just go somewhere else. So he said, you can buy these haunted houses and get a nice place for a reasonable price and have a temple and do Sankirtan and liberate the ghosts. So these are the two general scenarios by which one could get a ghost body. Now, what does this have to do with us? I hope that it doesn't have any direct relation to us, but the speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam is making a point here. So I just wanted us to have the conceptual framework for what a ghost is. And now we will proceed to the broader point. So we ended up with this sentence. Ghosts are always very bad elements, always creating a fearful situation for others. Similarly, the ghost-like non-devotees who have no respect for the pure devotees, nor for the Vishnu deity in the temples, create a fearful situation for the devotees at all times. The Lord never accepts any offering by such impure ghosts. Now, this is a very deep point that, anyway, the Lord will not accept offerings from those who are not devotees. That's the essence of the instruction. And therefore, no material qualification makes us eligible to receive the Lord's mercy. The only qualification is the sincere desire to serve the Lord and please the Lord. Now, we all have certain abilities. And we can engage those abilities in the Lord's service. In fact, those abilities are meant to be engaged in the service of the Lord. But it's not that we have to develop any material ability in order to please the Lord. Whatever ability we have is fine. The real thing is our sincere desire to serve and please. So in that sense, Krishna consciousness is open to anyone and everyone. Now, how does one become a devotee? That's a very important question, because we can't please the Lord. The Lord will not accept our offerings unless we are devotees. So how does one become a devotee? There is a common saying that one should first love the dog of the beloved before one shows any loving sentiments for the beloved. Have you ever heard of that? There's a saying, love me, love my dog. The stage of pure devotion is attained by sincerely serving a pure devotee of the Lord. The first condition of devotional service to the Lord is therefore to be a servant of a pure devotee. And this condition is fulfilled by the statement, quote, reception of the dust of the lotus feet of a pure devotee who has also served another pure devotee, end quote. That is the way of pure disciplic succession, or devotional parampara. Now, after Natasha's beautiful kirtan, Maya Priya led also a very moving rendition of the prayers to Lord Nishungadeva. Is there anyone here who does not know who Nishungadeva is?
No, I doubt anyone knows.
Okay.
Except me. Cool.
Okay.
No.
Sorry?
We haven't gone into it.
Yes. So, Nishungadeva, this will be very easy. This will be very easy for you. So in this, there's one person mentioned in these prayers is Prahlad. Prahlad was a pure devotee. And his father was Hiranyakashipu. He was a big tyrant. And he was like, you know, such a staunch atheist that he rejected his own son because his son became a devotee of Vishnu or Krishna. Now, he was a very powerful ruler, and he had his own school. And when he discovered that his son had become a devotee, he summoned the teachers, and he questioned them that Prahlad has become a devotee, and you are to blame. You must have allowed devotees to enter the school in disguise, but somehow he has become changed. And they said, we have not done that. He said, well then, how could he become a devotee? And they said, well, we don't know. Maybe you should ask him. So this is on the topic, I'm sure you get it, this is on the topic of how one becomes a devotee. So the father summoned the son, and he asks him, how did you become a devotee? And Prahlad replied that one cannot become a devotee by one's own efforts. Then he said, one cannot become a devotee by having meetings, having assemblies and discussing. That means by a combination of one's own efforts and the efforts of others, and one cannot become a devotee by the efforts of others. So it seemed logically there's no way. You can't become a devotee by your own efforts, you can't become a devotee by the efforts of others, and you can't become a devotee by the combined effort of yourself and others. So how can one become a devotee? So then he gives the answer that one can become a devotee only if he is blessed by the dust of the lotus feet of a pure devotee. And we'll discuss what that actually means. But the same answer. And then he told his father that you don't need to worry about becoming a devotee because you are too proud. You'll never bow down to the feet of a pure devotee, so you don't need to worry about becoming a devotee. Now there was a singer named Boy George. Have you heard of Boy George? So Boy George, he liked the devotees and he was influenced by Krishna consciousness. And he saw that in all of our temples, the devotees would bow down to the Lord and even to other devotees. And so he went to Vrindavan and he expected to see the same standard there. But in many temples in Vrindavan, of course there are many great devotees in Vrindavan, which is a holy place of Krishna in India. But he saw some people weren't bowing down. And that concerned him. So he wrote this song, Bow Down, Mister. Don't be so proud. Bow down. And that bowing down is very important. Spiritually, I mean, it can be expressed physically by bowing down, but internally it's very important that we bow down. And there was once a... Yes, Prabhupada gave a talk in the early days in, I think, Seattle, Washington. And a young man said that he feels that spiritually we're all equal. And he doesn't understand why he should have to bow down to someone else. So Prabhupada said, you have to bow down because that is your constitutional position. You're meant for bowing down. When you go to the office or the shop or wherever you work, don't you have to bow down to your boss? Don't you have to do what your boss tells you? I said, yes, but that's material. But spiritually, I don't see why you have to bow down. And then Srila Prabhupada said, but you have to bow down. And if you don't bow down to God, to Krishna, you will be forced to bow down to birth, death, disease, and old age. Can you avoid that? No. So you have to bow down. So you have to think, you have to consider, where can you bow down that will make you happy? Because you're meant for bowing down, you are bowing down. Every moment you're bowing down. You're forced to accept conditions that we don't like. So that is the wisdom of the devotee, that he bows down to the Supreme Personality of God. And that is, yes, that is a special mercy if one can do that. And that is achieved through this phrase, reception of the dust of the lotus feet of the Lord's pure devotee. And generally, that means to follow the instructions of the pure devotee. Because, you know, one cannot understand the science of transcendence fully or properly unless one is a pure devotee or a follower of a pure devotee. And that's why the sacred texts themselves say that you cannot achieve success by independent study of books. And that's why it's a principle that one should study with the help of devotees. So this association here at the Bhakti House is meant to give everyone the opportunity to associate with devotees and to understand really who we are, what our actual identities are, and what the goal of life is. And ultimately the goal of life is for us as individual souls to revive our relationship with the Supreme Soul. And by doing that, we become free from all the miseries of material existence. Nobody wants miseries. If I ask anyone of you or anyone, have you come here to learn how to be miserable? Do you go to the temple or the church or the mosque to pray to become miserable? No. Nobody wants to be miserable. Everyone wants to be happy. But there is a process. And unfortunately, many people, most people, do not know the process. And this is the process of Bhakti Yoga. And that's why people can engage in the same activities day after day, year after year, decade after decade. And they never get tired of it because they are always relishing new taste, new happiness. And you don't find that in the material world. Generally, people are always looking for something new, some new experience, some new gadgets. But here, it's the same activities. But because the activities are transcendental or spiritual, they are never stale or hackneyed. They're always fresh. once a newspaper reporter asked Srila Prabhupada, what does this chanting accomplish? And he said, his file, he said, the chanting accomplishes chanting. In other words, chanting accomplishes chanting, and more chanting, and still more chanting. And that chanting is our life, and so it's our association with Krishna, with the Supreme Soul. And I'm sure you've experienced that, and that's why you're here. And yeah, the more you chant, the more you want to chant. So I think I will stop here. I actually have two ideas of topics. So this was the beginning of one. I suggested maybe I could combine the two, but then we would really go on. But let us see if you have any questions or comments, and that can guide us as to how to proceed. Yes, can you repeat your names before you speak? Yes, you
are. My name's Chris.
Yes, Chris.
Can ghosts make spiritual progress?
Yes. You see, Krishna consciousness is transcendental. It is not, it cannot be caused by any material situation, and it cannot be stopped by any material situation. Now, you may be surprised to hear how Prahlad became a devotee. He explained to his father how you can't become a devotee, and he explained in principle how you can be a devotee by hearing the instructions of a pure devotee. But where did he get the opportunity to hear the instructions of a pure devotee? It turned out that when he was in the womb, a pure devotee gave spiritual instructions to his mother. And although he was in the womb, he heard those instructions. And by hearing those instructions in the womb, he emerged as the great devotee of God. So a ghost's body is also just another body. Like you could say, Prahlad was in the body of a fetus. So some living entity is in the body of a ghost. And he can benefit by the same methods, by hearing the chanting. And in Vedic culture, there are rituals. These do not apply to devotees. But there are rituals that the son will perform for the father, or mother, in case that the mother or father is in the body of a ghost. And part of that ritual involves offering prasad. You know what prasad is? Food offered to the Lord. So yes, by chanting, by reciting the Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam, and even by offering prasad, the ghost can be liberated from that ghostly existence. It's a good question.
Hi, my name's Austin. When you say chanting, do you mean literal verbal chanting, or do you mean some sort of ritual expression? Because what about people who are born deaf and cannot hear?
Well, I mean, the word kirtan means literally to glorify. And so that the glorification can be of the Lord's name, form, qualities, pastimes, associates. If someone is born deaf, they can approach the Lord through other processes, because the idea is to come in touch with the Lord. And so the easiest way, the most universal way, is by chanting. You can do it by reading scripture. It's as good as chanting, but you need the book. You can do it by worshiping the form of the Lord, but then you need the Lord's form to worship. So chanting, you don't need anything. But so if someone is born deaf, they can learn to read. They can read the scriptures. They can learn, and they can see the deity. They can worship the deity. Even seeing the deity being worshipped is included in deity worship. And there are a number of devotees who are deaf, and they have taken it up as a project to approach deaf people and tell them about Krishna consciousness. And they preach or teach using sign language. And there's a whole, you could say, range of facilities available even for deaf people to become Krishna conscious. So no one is excluded. And I believe even deaf people can be taught how to pronounce words. But they can also chant. They won't hear, but they can chant Krishna will hear. It's also a good question. We have a very compassionate group here. One is concerned about the ghosts. Another one is concerned about deaf people. Very compassionate group.
I have a question regarding Suda and leadership. When choosing your career path, how do you do that with keeping a service to Krishna for a month? Is there a difference when you're doing something for sustaining your daily existence? How do you dedicate that to session?
Yes, that is a good question. And there are a number of ways in which we can dedicate our work to Krishna. The most basic is that we are working to get some income to live. So if we dedicate our lives to Krishna's service, then the work that we do to get the money that we need to support our life in Krishna consciousness, that is also not outside of Krishna consciousness. Then another way is that if we have some excess, because everyone should give some of what he earns to the cause of Krishna consciousness, to further the mission of Krishna consciousness. That's another way. And then still another way is when you, it depends on what your work is, but in the course of your work you'll meet people. So if you get a chance, you can tell them about Krishna. And that can be done by speaking and also by giving them books. I never go anywhere without books, because you never know. Last night, my flight from Chicago to Charlottesville was delayed by 2 hours. And so I was, one of my friends named Ritukrajaswami texted me, you know, where are you? How are you doing? I said, well, you know, at that stage they had announced it was delayed by 1 hour. So he wrote back that, Krishna will be sending someone. You know, it always happens, so, be perfect. So I had that in my mind, and I was walking from, my arrival gate to the departure gate to wait. And I stood up, thought I'll just go somewhere and try to find a place to chant. And a man who sort of like called to me, well, where are you from? And I could see one of the children. So I came, I sat with him, we had like a long talk. He was very concerned about the earthquake victims in Nepal, and, and then at the end, because it's like no matter how much we want to help people, as long as they're in the material world, they will suffer. Can't avoid it. And so we discussed how ultimately we can only be free from these calamities if we go to the spiritual world. And so I had a number of books with me, and there was a small book called Beyond Birth and Death, which seemed, appropriate. So he took that book. So it's always good to carry books, at work. Anywhere, go to the bank, go to the gas station, because you don't know who you might meet, might be interested.
But on the various levels of devotion, especially as new students of Krishna and devotion, is it proper to offer? I mean, is that different than offering your services to Krishna by offering books to people that aren't aware of Krishna?
If they're open to learning, mm-hmm. Yes, that's very good service to Krishna. Mm-hmm. Because Krishna comes and speaks the Bhagavad Gita so that we will come back to him. And at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, he says that anyone who teaches or shares this message with others is his dearmost servant. So that's the best service to Krishna. Srila Prabhupada gives the example that, a rich man's son may run away from home and be loitering in the street. And someone who knows his father might recognize him. So other people might give him, you know, some food to eat, you know, but that won't solve the problem permanently. But that friend of the father, they say, oh, I know you, you're the son of so-and-so. Why don't you come back home to your father? Then you won't be loitering in the street and not knowing where to get food or shelter or support. So if you bring that loitering person back to the father will be pleased, and all of the son's problems will be solved permanently. I mean, it's a crude example, but so in the same way, if we can bring someone back to Krishna, it will solve all of their problems forever. And it will also please Krishna to no limit. So that's really the best service to Krishna. Yeah.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Yes?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, my name is Abir. My question is, all of us, you know, we like chanting, and chanting is, it's a wonderful, joyful process, whether we do it by ourselves or in a group. How do we know that it's working on us, that we're, you know, how do we self-examine our spiritual advancement?
That's a good question, too. Now, sometimes the change can be subtle. And I'll give an example that you get on an airplane and, you know, you sit down, you're talking to your friend, maybe you're eating a snack or drinking a beverage or reading something, and you're not conscious of what's been happening. But then you look out the window and you see, oh my God, we're like, you know, thousands of feet in the air. So that's one way of gauging, because Krishna consciousness is very subtle, because it's really a change of consciousness. It may not involve dramatic external changes. So it's a change of consciousness. But if you sort of look out the window to where you were before and where you are now, you can say, oh, there's a difference, a significant difference. Before, you know, dot, dot, dot. And now, different. In fact, that's it, yeah. And even others can notice it. It does happen that devotees' parents are uncomfortable with Krishna consciousness, but after a while, when they see the positive changes, they become favorable. And they can even start to take up some of the practices themselves. But yeah, in broad terms, you should feel your attraction for Krishna increasing, and your attachment to Maya decreasing. But that can also be subtle, because our principle is to use everything in Krishna's service. So doesn't becoming detached from Maya or illusion does not necessarily mean that you reject something material. It may mean that you use it in a more pure way to serve Krishna and others. So, yeah, I think you, those of you who know Abir, do you think he's making advancements? Anyway, whatever your judgment is, I request you all to pray for him so that he can make good advancements.